Why would my kids drive a car in 25 years? Why wouldn't they have something that is obviously much safer because it is based upon billions and billions of miles of data that's trained, which like logically from first principles has to be safer than a regular human. The demand quite literally is infinite because you're talking about replacing all of labor on the planet, which is an $80 trillion market opportunity. Amazon, all these, Walmart, all the big companies in the world potentially buying Optimus or some type of humanoid robotics. It's going to be a revolution that we've never seen.
When the market realizes the bot is for real, like actually for real and it's viable, then the movement should be a multiple of what happened with Tesla with the electric car.
Trump believes in growth, deregulation, and pushing America forward. I think that's what Elon believes in as well. You can't go short a name that is best friends with the White House.
He's able to see the big picture better than anyone else, like any other player on the field. This company didn't exist 18 months ago. They go from zero to the biggest training GPU cluster on the face of planet Earth in 18 months. If it takes OpenAI a year to put up a cluster and it takes Elon 2 months to do the same thing, that 10-month gap is almost an insurmountable moat that you can't come back from.
This guy's going to be at the forefront of the transformation of civilization in the next 5-10 years. Amit has a channel called Amit. Pronounce your last name.
Kukreja.
Kukreja.
Yep.
And he is one of the go-to people for finance for me specifically. And he is the undoubted king of Palantir. You just cannot argue with this, okay?
And Robinhood.
And Robinhood. So Amit's just a finance savant, okay? Amit also covers Tesla extremely well. But there was one comment you made on your post. My car can drive itself. Tried FSD for the first time this week. And all I can say is I need more Tesla stock, not financial advice. Took my dad in a 20-minute FSD drive last night, and he could not believe what he was seeing either. Really makes you wonder if humans will drive at all in 10 years. Okay, so, and that, of course, captured my attention, because V13, since it dropped, it's been a lot of a confirmation of the long-term Tesla thesis that this is an unstoppable train, not financial advice. We're going to be talking about stock and finances a lot this podcast as well. So if you're listening to this, nothing we say you should be taking as advice. It's just three bozos talking about stuff, okay? So help me understand that post in detail, because I'd love to dig into different things with you on it. So go for it.
I think to start off, I was a pretty big FSD skeptic over the past 2 years. I never tried FSD before in my life, but the sort of general premise that cars would drive without a driver and that would be A, safer, or B, like healthy for society, I was always very skeptical. And it wasn't until I really started researching about the productivity gains for FSD this year, earlier this year, which is kind of dug me down the rabbit hole on why Elon is staking the... I mean, he literally said that, you know, it's either autonomy and we go to trillions or zero. And so when he said that, I was like, okay, so this guy really believes in it. What am I not getting? Because there's no way he's wrong on this and I'm right. There's got to be something that I'm missing here. And then I got the Tesla because they gave the 0% APR in November. So I traded in my Honda Civic, got a nice down payment on the Tesla, got the Tesla. And I had the FSD full a trial for a month. And after seeing it drive me, there were some, you know, hiccups here and there, lane switching, all that stuff. But for the most part, I did not have to be attentive. I had to look, you know, to make sure things were okay, but I didn't have to like literally focus on driving. And that, it unlocked everything to me in terms of the game changer for safety, the game changer for productivity, the game changer for why would my kids drive a car in 25 years? Why wouldn't they have something that is obviously much safer because it is based upon billions and billions of miles of data that's trained, which like logically from first principles has to be safer than a regular human. Even if that human has drove thousands of miles in their life, they probably didn't drive billions of miles. And then it just clicked in my head, like, oh, this is the future and this stock needs to be having more exposure in my portfolio.
And so what's interesting about that, and I'll throw it over to Hans, is that you are a very, very bright individual, okay? But I also know that Tesla, just like Palantir, just like Robinhood, right? So like the parallel I draw is like Palantir, you have been super bullish on for a really long time, and it seems like the market is finally waking up to it, right? But it seems like it's just the beginning. And Tesla's, you know, from my viewpoint, it's literally exactly the same thing.
Yep.
And it seems like now you're coming much closer to that end game, even though, you know, like, I know you know that the long-term potential was there for a long time, but it wasn't until you got into the car that was like, oh, aha. Like, there was, it seems like a light bulb of sorts went off that really confirmed that long-term thesis. Is that a fair characterization?
Yeah, I couldn't stop driving the car once I got it. I was like, oh, this car is amazing. And then when I finally tried FSD, I was like, oh, this story is amazing. And then when you put it with the entire Tesla thesis, you start to realize why people have held on to the stock for more than a day.
Hunt, go for it.
Which version of FSD do you have on the free trial? Is it 12.5.6 or is it the 12.5.4 branch?
12.5.6. It's definitely not 13 because they didn't update the software. So it's the one right below it. But still, it was, you know, pretty amazing for someone who never experienced FSD before.
Yeah, and for the audience, so that's going to be the one that has the larger neural net models that don't necessarily fit on the Hardware 3 computer today. Well, don't worry, Hardware 3 will be fine. But yeah, so it's like the best model that's out there that FSD has available for normal people that are not named Chuck Cook or Omar or JD.
Yeah. So, okay. So let me dig a little bit deeper on your sort of long-term, like now you're bought in, it seems like you're bought into the story a little bit more of FSD's impact. Do you think that's what, so if we track the stock market for the last couple of weeks, Tesla's been on a massive tear, right? It's been on a massive tear. It seems like it's almost doubled in the last couple of months. I forget. No, it's been longer than that. But has it? I don't know. I got to go back and look. But it's gone on a pretty massive tear here in the last couple of months. Do you think
really
some of that...
Really since the election, mostly.
Yeah. So do you think this run is correlated to FSD in any way? Do you think this is more a Trump is going to give Elon a very friendly regulatory framework to work with in the next 4 years, which I think is a super underrated thing that's happening with Trump and Elon for the coming sort of 4 years plus. How are you viewing the recent moves with Tesla stock?
Yeah, I think I think Tesla at 150, 160, I think that's a 138 at the lows this year, was left for dead. And the narrative was that Elon is too political. And the bigger narrative was that they're not coming out with a $25,000 car. And both of those things got spinned in very weird ways. And he didn't have his compensation package. But then by April, May, he got the compensation package. He clarified on earnings, they will be having a $25,000 car, even if the core focus of the company is on autonomy. And from a political perspective, I think a lot of the world started to agree with his perspective, which is that, hey, like, you know, you can't have ChatGPT running the country. We need someone who has a little bit more excitement around what's happening. And as a result of that, Trump ended up winning. Elon, obviously, the connection with Trump can't be understated, how important it is to have the most powerful man in the world as what seems like one of your best friends. So I think all three of those narratives converged into the idea that this is the best trade of 2025, the best Trump trade over the next 4 years. So that happened. But then, from what I'm reading from the sell side reports every day, now analysts are starting to care about Optimus. And I think they're starting to care about Optimus because in the private market, they're probably seeing a lot more of these private startups get progress with Optimus. I think it takes one purchase order from Tesla for 100,000, 200,000 robots for the market to be, oh my goodness, this TAM is gigantic. It's way better margins than the car. And the demand quite literally is infinite because you're talking about replacing all of labor on the planet, which is an $80 trillion market opportunity. And so from that perspective, that converges with the energy narrative around AI. FSD starts to become very real. Someone like my dad, who would never get into a self-driving car, was with me for 20 minutes on Sunday night. And we were just driving around and he kind of felt safe. He thought it was cool. He was even telling me to like not touch it ever. And like, even on the crazy turns, he was like, let's just see what it does. Let's see if it can figure it out. And I think when you put all that together, you get a stock where people are like, yeah, it's worth $1.29 trillion, which is conventionally expensive, but this thing is going to $20 trillion in our lifetimes. And I think that's why people are buying it right now.
I think what's interesting about the bot story, so I've been hearing a lot more like bot developments just in my sort of circles than I have previously combined in the last like month. We spoke with people like Chris Camillo from Dumb Money. He's huge into the bot market. Our our correspondent, let's say our very good friend Larry, who, by the way, is starting a podcast on this channel, more about that coming in the next couple of days. He is getting a lot of exposure to that market. So we are seeing a lot of the developments. You have your Figures, you have your Optronics, et cetera, that have been making huge strides in that market. What's very fascinating about that is that it seems like Tesla was one of the very first ones that started hinting towards this market being a real possibility with a dancing robot in 2020, you know, the person in the suit. And then at that point, people are like, what the, this is the dumbest thing of all time, right? And it hasn't really been until very recent that the general investing community is actually looking at this as a real opportunity. Because if you really view it from a first principles perspective, really, it's just a, it's a large product that shares some stuff with a car, batteries, an electric car, let's say, batteries, actuators, plastics, metals, they're just shaped in a different way. But the brain that powers that tool is also the brain that powers self-driving vehicles, as long as you're using artificial intelligence, right?
Yeah.
That is, and then here's a crazier thing. Here's the much crazier thing, which I don't think is being talked about. I was initially skeptical about this, but the more I talk to people about it, and the more I think about it, this is so obviously true. The regulations with vehicles, okay, they are going to be much harder to go through than regulations around human or robots. Why is that? With a vehicle, you are literally allowing people in public spaces, so in consumer areas, to handle a missile. You're trusting the average human with a missile, right? Like literally a missile. So the regulations around that are going to be very strict. With a humanoid robot, it's a B2B product that can be confined in areas, at least to start, and they don't even have to be driven by artificial intelligence. They can be teleoperated, and you can do a compounding effect on human labor. So instead of having five people doing a job, you put one person teleoperating five robots when they need help, and you allow them to work autonomously until somebody has to beam in, right? That is insane. That is absolutely insane, but it only works if it works, right? But I think with the advancements of artificial intelligence, which I think are like Tesla FSD, I view as a proof of concept for the underlying architecture for a bot to actually work autonomously long term, it's becoming a reality. So this is all to say that it seems like if FSD works, which it very much looks like it will, unsupervised robotaxi self-driving, then the bot works. And if the bot works, then your TAM 20x's on top of your previous TAM of vehicles, right?
Yeah, and I think the special thing about the bot is that no one understands it outside of you guys and your circle of people that understand bots. But Wall Street doesn't get it because, I mean, the Bank of America dude upgraded them from 350 to 400 on Optimus Progress. It's like if you really thought there was Optimus Progress, you would say this is $1,000 stock in like 2 years. You know, you wouldn't be incrementally scared to make this call. But a lot of people don't understand the unit economics on what this looks like. If Amazon replaces someone they're paying $70,000 a year for, that has bathroom breaks and HR issues and all this stuff, with a bot that's licensed for $100,000 over 5 years, Amazon's margins go through the roof, net income goes through the roof, free cash flow goes through the roof, the share price goes through the roof. And then if Tesla's the one selling them those robots, and then you have Amazon, you know, all these like Walmart, all the big companies in the world potentially buying Optimus or some type of humanoid robotics, it's going to be a revolution that we've never seen. And that's not talking about the ones that are going to go to your house and do your laundry, right? We're not even talking about that sector of it.
So, all right.
I think it's gonna be
Hans,
big.
Let me bring you in, Hans.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is a big engineering challenge left for the Optimus bot that is over and above the engineering challenge for FSD. Like, I think that we get to unsupervised robotaxis well before the humanoid, you know, the Optimus project is fully solved. But you can definitely solve it in, you know, like the Amazon use case specifically, pretty quickly. And that just gives you know, all the cash flow, all the runway you need. So as long as Tesla, like, we're basically assuming that Tesla continues its run of just absolute AI engineering excellence and can execute on that product, But given competition, you know, the staff, like even if Elon was not at Tesla, I would still put the Tesla team in a better position to win at that engineering challenge than any of the other competitors. But they'll definitely face stiff competition from China. You know, Figure and Aptronik are going to be doing some cool things as well. But yeah, like as far as what are the risks in the overall story, like you do have to assume that that engineering challenge is one that we're going to be able to push through and be not just push through, but be the leader in.
Yeah. The way I like conceptualize the on-ramp of bot is, you know, and I know it's the wrong way of looking at it, but this is sort of how my brain works. So Tesla gained a valuation advantage when their EVs became profitable, with the understanding that long term there will be some sort of FSD lever that they can pull, right? So, and I think that's why they perform so well versus their legacy automakers getting PEs of 7 or 10, and people like Gordon Johnson saying overvalued. Like, no, the market understands that they have a viable product that can stand on its own. And it seems like they kind of understand that there's a software layer on top of it that will take it to the promised land. The bot working in private industry before going wide and say being teleoperated in Amazon, to me, feels like that sort of dynamic where Tesla is going to get some level of valuation, I hope, by the market that says private industry is adopting the product. But we understand that outside of private industry, there could be a 10x multiplier because now you're going from 1% or less of the world being able to leverage humanoid labor to 8 billion people, right? And that transforms the equation entirely. And so I'm curious to see how the market, and so by default, if that's true, then in theory, the market valuations should sort of kind of reflect the TAMs that they're going to be entering in each phase, right? So if Tesla is getting a $500 billion valuation or $1 trillion valuation with a profitable electric vehicle before unsupervised self-driving comes to fruition and before they have 100 million cars driving around the world by 2035 or 2040, right? Which eventually gets it to $5-10 trillion on just that business alone, maybe more. Then in theory, if the labor market is 10x or larger than the auto industry market, then that multiplier should also apply to the phases from which the human or robot comes in. So this is kind of loosely to say that when the market realizes the bot is for real, like actually for real and it's viable, then the movement should be a multiple of what happened with Tesla with the electric car, right? But I don't want to say that as investment advice. I'm just kind of working through what could happen based on how the market values this. And then the underpinning there, which is, again, I think underrated, you have the president of the United States being an active backer and an active supporter of Elon Musk's industry. And I think that is underrated in that story arc. How long can that last? Are they going to fall out of favor? Is Elon going to say this guy's a fucking idiot? Is Trump going to kick him out because his ego is too big? I have no idea. I'm just talking about, like, from a positive perspective, this is kind of what I'm envisioning as one of the possible outcomes, right? I'd love to hear anyone's thoughts on that. I know I tend to get over optimistic, but I'd love to hear if somebody's got to say anything.
Yeah, I think my big thing on like Elon and Trump is that Elon knows that the country would have headed in the wrong direction for a lot of reasons, definitely from an economic perspective, if the other party had won. So Elon put a big bet on Trump, and I don't think he agrees with everything that Trump agrees with, but at its core, Trump believes in growth, deregulation, and pushing America forward. And I think that's what Elon believes in as well. I think there is a risk that relationship could go sour, because we've seen in the past with Trump's relationships, but I don't think that happens because Elon knows, like, who does he go to if this relationship doesn't work out? And I think Trump knows, you know, Elon put a lot of money into the campaign. Elon gives him a lot of good publicity. Elon's the world's greatest entrepreneur, saying that Trump's the best president in the world. Like, it's mutually beneficial for Trump to be associated with Elon as well. So sure. I think from a deregulatory perspective around SpaceX self-driving, Trump's going to have him covered. Elon's going to have to give up a little bit, like the EV tax credit, which I don't think Elon even cared about in the first place. And that makes Trump look good to his base for internal combustion engine workers. So then the question just becomes, is what Elon's giving up enough? Is there enough of an ROI on that? And I don't think he's giving up much other than maybe you could argue his brand perception, which I don't think he cares about. And then the money that he put into the campaign, which is a penny for $200 million is not a lot of money. So if you put those two together over the next 4 years, I don't see how Tesla is not one of the most favorite stocks of the market, given the market opportunity starting to present itself with everything you talked about with robotics, FSD, but also the market perception is that you can't go short a name that is best friends with the White House. I mean, Bank of America's first upgrade 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago from 265 to 350, I read the whole report and they might as well name the report Trump. Like everything was about, every paragraph was about Trump does this, Trump does this, Trump does this, Elon likes Trump here, here, here. And this last upgrade was about Optimus, but it seems like the initial sort of bump that we saw post-election was because the market thinks Trump's going to be bullish. And unless anything changes with that, then Tesla should be bullish as well.
Yeah, and I think to add to that a little bit, the points of disagreement that Elon and Trump have had in the past, I think, you know, on both sides of the equation, have kind of receded into the background, that the importance of, you know, having a stimulatory environment for EVs to be able to get a foothold in the market, that Trump was, you know, less favorable towards. That was one of the areas where Elon disagreed with the first Trump administration. And then on the flip side, you know, I think that one of the areas that Trump really discounted Elon for was that he probably viewed Elon as being just more in the pocket of the Democrats and, you know, not really an independent person. And so, you know, that's obviously also receded into the background. And so I think that there's less for them to disagree on moving forward regarding things that they have disagreed on in the past. Now, that doesn't mean that new points of disagreement can't pop up, but I think that, you know, the world has changed enough in the last 6 to 8 years that the points of disagreement are going to be lower moving forward. And like you said, like, it's just such a mutually beneficial relationship for both of them at this point in time. You know, and Elon is going to be one of the pivotal assets for the West in Cold War 2.0 with China. And you just can't understate how significant that fact is for anyone who's in power, that you need Tesla, you need SpaceX, you really, 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 really need SpaceX. In
like really, really badly.
Yeah. In whatever the future of warfare looks like, you know, the ability to loft like orders of magnitude more payload into space, like that changes the dynamics of warfare. And we, you know, we talk about hypersonic missiles and how those are, you know, an advantage that China has over the United States right now. And that's true and significant. But, you know, there are things that are faster than hypersonic missiles and they typically are circling the Earth in outer space. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's a huge issue, but then you've got communications, you know, all kinds of stuff. And that fact does give Elon leverage in relationships when he's doing business in China. It gives him leverage in negotiations with the United States government. And the fact that, you know, he really is pro-American, wants America to be successful and to be able to defend itself well, also, you know, aligns his agenda with any United States administration.
Yeah, It's almost like difficult to find like places where Elon's ability to have his industry succeed. Let's assume, and here's where it gets hairy, right? Because the criticism that I hear, which I agree with it in a lot of respects, but it kind of like it lessens when you're talking about Elon Musk directly, is that there's one individual that's going to win too much here. Like one individual is about to get such outsized winning that
we haven't even talked about XAI. Yeah.
We're not talking about exactly. So it's like the amount of winning, again, outside of a force majeure, craziness, the worst possible outcome, you know, the black swan events, you know, let's give them the statistical probability they deserve. But as long as those don't happen, it seems like there is a very clear path and ramp for him. So much so that what I'm starting to see too is, like, if you look at the opposite side of the political spectrum with the Democrats, they're making an effort to court him back, right? People like John Fetterman. John Fetterman is becoming one of, like, the faces of the Democrat Party in a lot of ways. I'm noticing,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
Being very complimentary of Elon. We don't agree on everything, but he's great. We want to work together. You know, when Elon and Vivek went to Congress, this is a huge deal. Again, like, there's Ro so Khanna. Much winning. Ro Khanna is another one. Exactly. Right. And so you're the Gavin Newsom faction of the party. Like, how effective are they going to be for the next election, next couple of election cycles, if they don't have someone like an Elon on their side, right? Especially with his PAC. It's such a weird dynamic with it. It's almost like this is the best possible outcome for Elon Musk, you know? And it kind of paid off by the, and again, this is like a theme for Elon. He took a massive risk buying Twitter and throwing his entire being behind one presidential candidate to the tune of $200+ million, and he won. And so now he's about to benefit from the fruits of that investment, let's say. That is the Musk arc to a T.
Yeah, I don't think Elon has ever lost an all-in bet, ever. Like, all in SpaceX and Tesla at the same time, is able to pull off both.
Yeah.
Doesn't even have to sacrifice one for the other. When he went all in for the Model 3, Tesla made it through.
Twitter.
You know, Twitter. Yeah, all in, well, that, Twitter.
Not all in, but, you know, he went all in from a reputational perspective.
Yeah. And then all in with his support for Trump. I love the Peter Thiel quote that is not that old, where he was talking, to the person who was interviewing him about a book that he and David Sacks had thought about writing at one point. And they said, you know, we wanted to title the chapter about Elon Musk, the man who knew nothing about risk, because, you know, that's why he and David Sacks orchestrated the coup to get Elon Musk out of the CEO position at PayPal. It was because they thought he was crazy and that he was going to take too many risks and his risks were going to tank PayPal. And, you know, I mean, that's the closest thing to an all-in. I guess maybe you could say that's an all-in loss, where he was too heavy into risk and, you know, he got kneecapped by his own team.
Which is ironic, given that they're on a podcast called All In.
Yeah, yes. But, you know, the thing that he followed that up with, he's like, you know, then if you watch what he's been able to execute since then, going all in on Tesla and SpaceX in the 2000s, when everyone thought he was crazy, everyone thought they were both going to fail, and you could almost chalk it up to luck if he got one but not the other. But then when he gets both, it's like, okay, he's the man who actually knows something about risk that the rest of us don't.
Dude, why do you guys think every all-in bet he's made has worked?
I mean, that's the trillion dollar.
It can't be luck, right? Like, if every one of them work, it has to be something.
I think it boils down to a couple things. I think he's able to see the big picture better than anyone else, like any other player on the field. He is able to visualize all the pieces that are at play and identify where the real points of leverage are. And then once he figures out, so he sees the points of leverage better than anyone else. And then when he really identifies the biggest points of leverage, he just goes all in on that one thing and focuses on it until he blows it wide open. And his ability to focus on that and then pour just like a massive amount of energy into that leverage point, I think, is unmatched. And so he's gonna outwork, you know, people. There's a Taiwanese entrepreneur who's working on an AI project called Bigo that's really cool. And one of the things that he was talking about Bigo is the US subsidiary. There's a US startup, and then there's another version in China called O1. And so the O1 version, he's saying, you know, we're going to be able to outcompete a lot of these American companies at commercializing this AI technology because we just work harder. We're going to 996 this thing. And 996 is a great competitive advantage against 99% of American companies. But XAI is doing 9 a.m. to 2 a.m. 7 days a week. So your 996, where you're doing 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. 6 days a week, is not going to be able to compete with an Elon Musk company that's even more hardcore than that. And, you know, that's just another example. Like he's able to attract that top talent. Like he sees the big field, then attracts the best talent, then
with Western resources. And I think that's an underrated thing too.
And Western outside the box thinking, like the brilliance and crazy. It's just, you know, he's able to do, and this is something people just do not understand, how hard it is to get smart people to focus on the one thing that you want them to focus on and work as hard as they can to solve that one problem. Like, I love it when people say, oh, he just hires smart people and lets them do their thing. It's like, well, you've obviously never hired a smart person. You have no idea how hard it is to convince a smart person to do what you want instead of whatever the fuck they want to do. And not only just one of them, like, we're going to put a whole bunch of these people together, then that's even worse. You've got a whole bunch of smart people all fighting with each other and trying to figure out their own priorities and agendas. It's like, no, we're going to get all the smartest people in the world, then we're going to align them around this one thing, and we're going to push as hard as humanly possible on this one point of leverage, and eventually the dam is going to break, and then it's going to be game over.
I think another thing that he's very good at, I agree with all of that, if I were to come up with an answer, the one thing I would layer on is that he is extremely good at identifying existential needs. And what is the biggest correlation with an existential need? A gigantic TAM. If it's an existential need, a lot of people are going to want that thing. No. But existential needs are very hard to execute. So how does he execute against them? What Hans just said. And then when they execute, what happens? You have a product or service that no one else is offering because it's extremely difficult, but it's existential. So the market just speaks for itself. And then when people are like, oh my God, I can't believe this exists. I can't believe a $35,000 car drives itself. I can't believe a rocket brings itself back to Earth and it's made a space flight like 10 times cheaper with the avenue of being 100 times cheaper. I can't believe there is a brain chip in someone's head where he can play chess with his mind and live stream for 72 hours straight. I can't believe he's looking to solve the traffic situation that everyone wants to kill themselves with, right? I can't believe he has opened up freedom of speech and has changed the trajectory of information flow and speech forever, potentially, given where we were going.
I can't believe he got President Trump elected.
Yeah. I can't believe he built the fastest supercomputer on Earth in 19 days. I mean, it's fucking crazy. And it's, you know, it's, I don't think, you know, he's definitely an exceptional human being. He's obviously a very flawed human, just like anybody. I do think he is top 1% intelligence. But what's crazy is that it's not like he has any like unique qualities that no one else has. Is that he just happens to have them all in one package.
Yeah.
Right? Usually people with amazing vision and strategy don't want to work 120 hours a week.
Yeah.
Because they want to spend the time imagining those things. They want to spend the time thinking about the future and what it looks like. He can do both. And he can inspire. And he can manage. And he can delete his ego. And he knows how to market his brand. Right? And he knows how to engineer. What the fuck is that?
And I think that's why everyone wants exposure to Tesla. Because when you're like going after that many different TAMs in regards to what Tesla is, which essentially is an ETF for energy, robotics, and AI, I think it gets people really, really excited. So here's another question then. Do you think XAI is going to be more valuable than OpenAI the next decade?
Oh, yes. It already probably is, I think.
And I think OpenAI is going to zero.
Yeah.
Okay, so I kind of think the same, but what's your take?
Go ahead, Hans. You want to go? I interrupted.
Yeah. So the fact that they have a 100 GPU cluster right now is kind of an indisputable fact that they are the leaders in actual, frontier LLM progress. we haven't seen Grok 3 drop yet, but it's essentially baked into the current valuation of XAI that it's going to be a breakthrough. And the Gavin Baker segment on the All In podcast last week was, you know, really a big wake up call, I think, for a lot of people that I knew that they had built the 100,000 GPU cluster. I did not fully realize that that was a single networked GPU brain. And it wasn't just like, we've got a whole bunch of them and now we're doing three, because, you know, the largest cluster that had ever been networked together before that for training as one unit was approximately 30,000 hoppers. And so for them to go from 30,000 hoppers to 100,000 hoppers as one unit, that means that's three times larger than the largest one in existence already. So, like, this company didn't exist 18 months ago. They go from zero to the biggest training GPU cluster on the face of planet Earth in 18 months, and it's three times larger than the next largest. OpenAI has plateaued. Like, we haven't seen major progress from them in essentially 12 months. The reason we haven't seen a whole lot of progress from them in the last 12 months is because they hit this plateau on how big of a GPU they could train with. All the progress that we had seen from them before that was a function of their ability to, hey, we're going to start out with a 10,000 GPU cluster, and then we're going to do a 20,000 GPU cluster, and then we're going to do a 30,000 GPU cluster. And every time we increase the size of our cluster, then we get a better model on the backside of that. And the whole industry hit that plateau. No one could break through 30,000. And so, you know, everyone is able to essentially catch up to OpenAI. And then Elon comes along, and, you know, it sounded kind of like from the podcast that Elon personally, whether it was had the insight that allowed them to break through that wall, or whether he just was able to ask all the right questions of the smart team and they finally figured out how to do it, whatever it was, you know, apparently Elon is part of the secret sauce of what allowed XAI to have that breakthrough. And now we've got this incredible cluster. We'll test to see if the scaling laws hold. If Grok 3 comes out and it's like, you know, light years ahead of 4.0 and 0.1, then it will be conclusive that the ability to continue scaling those GPUs is going to be the same. Like, that's going to be synonymous with continued progress in AGI. And they're already talking about getting the next segment of 100,000 clusters up so they can go from 100,000 hoppers to 200,000 hoppers. And then they have priority on Blackwell behind that. You know, this was the thing that, you know, I had that real big epiphany on, is no wonder Jensen wants to give, if Elon now is the tip of the spear on growing cluster size, which then resets the market for NVIDIA GPUs, then Elon is going to be Jensen's number one customer from now until forever, because he wants Elon to be the standard by which all other clusters gets measured. And so he's always going to be first. So not only he's got this incredible advantage with being able to get a cluster up and running fast, like, that in and of itself is enough of a competitive advantage for him to crush OpenAI. If it takes OpenAI a year to put up a cluster and it takes Elon 2 months to do the same thing, well, that 10-month gap is almost an insurmountable moat that you can't come back from as OpenAI. But now add to that the fact that Elon's going to get the first shipment. You're not going to get shipment number one, and then Elon's still going to pass you up when he finally gets his GPUs. He's going to get his GPUs first. You're not even going to start on your giant cluster until after he's done. Yeah. How do you compete with that?
I agree with all of that. For the longest time, my whole thing has been, I don't understand OpenAI's long-term defensible moat. I don't know what they, like, outside of just chips, what do they have, right? They don't really have access to any proprietary data. the chips they already have, they're going to be massively surpassed by XAI, right? A direct competitor. The best talent is leaving OpenAI.
Yep.
And they're, go ahead.
That was the moat that they had. They had the best talent. And they did have access to the best training resources through Microsoft for a time. But now they don't have that talent anymore, and they don't have access to the best training resources.
Yeah. So to me, it's just a matter of time. I mean, if have you guys used O1 Pro, the latest version? Yeah. I use it. I mean, it is impressive. The results it's giving me. So I use it. You know, we're working on a project with media, which we're going to keep to our vest because we're doing some really cool stuff. But significantly better results. Significantly better results than I was getting before. But what is it really doing? It's just hitting the computer for longer. That was their solution. Because instead of generating a response in a minute, take 3 minutes to regenerate the response. And then we find that if we go longer, you get better responses. Cool. Okay, I don't understand the breakthrough. So you're just telling me somebody with better computers can do exactly what you did. Okay, it seems like OpenAI is going to, or XAI is going to be able to do that. Where the fuck is Sora?
No.
Where's Sora? Like, you showed that like a year ago. Great. Your voice assistant is pretty cool. Like, the one that talks back kind of quickly. Okay, but it's just what Siri should have been 10 years ago. Yeah. Right? So I think OpenAI, they're definitely a very useful service right now. And I do use them, and I pay the $200 a month for Pro, and I like Pro. But when I think about 5-10 years down the road, I don't understand what actual thing they offer that will allow them to differentiate themselves from their competition. Whereas with XAI, not only do they have an advantage from a compute perspective, they're going to be able to get dibs on everything. So that's a huge advantage. Then they're able to build that cluster more efficiently than anybody, which is an additional compounding force on having compute. So your additional compute is going to be faster. And then you have the talent to take the next generational steps and innovations to take you to the next level, both from a hardware configuration perspective and from a neural net perspective, whatever you want to call it. You just have the best, right? And fourth, who is the backer of this company? The guy with the most money in the world, who knows how to deploy it in the most efficient manner.
Well, and it seems like he just has to make a couple of phone calls to get literally all the money in the world that he needs to, you know, fund the next cluster. Like, everybody wants to give him money to participate in what XAI is doing right now. Like, he's not even going to have to put a dollar of his own, even though he's got all the resources. Like, he's got access to so much capital to continue doing this.
And the guy with the state-of-the-art chips that's going to power AI for the next 10 years at least is going to give him dibs.
Well, that's my thing. You guys are saying there's no moat, and I think I would have to agree with that. Zucks is open sourcing Llama. Google has Gemini. Elon has XAI. Like, OpenAI was cool when no one was working on it. But now if everyone is, the cost of training is going to go to zero, just like the cost of storage has inevitably went to zero. So it's like, why would you? And then you think all of these people are leaving that were used to be there. You got co-founders starting companies that are called super safe intelligence. It's like, why isn't OpenAI super safe intelligence? It is so weird. Like, it's really weird, bro. And then I'm thinking, well, why the hell did investors give them $150 billion as a valuation? Like, is that really hype? Or is there something we all don't get?
I think they're just, the way I view it is that we're in an AI boom cycle. And I think people with money that have been sitting on the sidelines are just throwing money wherever there is an AI moniker on it. Just like with the crypto thing back in the day. Just like there was another, like, what was the thing that there was like a buzzword from like 8 years ago that industry was using for the longest time? I forget what the hell. You know, like, now it's just generative AI and artificial intelligence and AI powered blah. So if you just do that, just throw money. And here's the thing with Sam specifically, Altman. I don't have anything against the guy. I think that he thinks he's trying to do the right thing, and he's trying his best to be of value to society. I think what he's trying too hard, in my opinion, to be like Elon. That's my vibe I get. I know Sam was somebody that really respected Elon. You can just see it from his last interview with the Times. I think the fallout they had is unfortunate, and I hope they can patch it up. But the vibe I get is that Elon's always been Elon, and then when Sam and Elon started butting heads, because Elon could see that being an open source platform would get him nowhere with the goal of actually making a super safe AI that's going to be useful for society. Once he started wanting to take it private and he wanted to be at the head of it, Sam was like, I'm not sure. But then Elon's like, okay, but then you're going to lose because then I'm just going to do it. Right. Which, you know, has all kinds of negative connotations, because now you're like, okay, you're going to go out and just do it yourself and you're kind of blah, blah, blah. But here's the thing. Sam used him for money. Sam wouldn't have what he has now if it wasn't for Elon's funding at the beginning. Right. I don't know. OpenAI is useful now. I think I just don't understand their long-term value proposition. I really, really don't.
So I have a question to ask both of you that will, I think, is an interesting question.
What the heck? We've brought Amit here. He's the one asking questions.
I get back into my interviewer phase.
Yeah. And this is a question for both of you. Should there be any higher priority for Tim Cook and Apple right now than getting access to XAI intelligence? And where do you handicap the likelihood that they recognize that that should be their priority and that they then execute on it?
So the question is, should Tesla invest in XAI? Or sorry, Apple?
Yeah, and make XAI the core of Apple intelligence instead of any partnership with OpenAI or trying to roll their own and continuing to fail.
Their homegrown sucks. Yeah. Ass. It's bad.
Dude, I've had it for the past couple months and it just summarizes notifications. That's it. Like, that's really the value. I'm just like, that's not valuable at all. But the thing is, Tim Cook doesn't like Elon. I wouldn't say he hates Elon, but he doesn't like him. And I think the safer route from a brand perception is to go with the company where they can say, hey, you know, don't talk about Nazis. You can't say that to Elon. Elon will be like, no.
Have to make it public. They could just white label it.
They could, but it's possible. I just think also Tim Cook doesn't take risks, right? Like, what acquisition has he done other than Beats by Dre in his tenure?
I forgot about
that. Everyone forgot about it. They paid $3 billion for Chinese headphones. I mean, like, with a B on it. Like, it's just, I don't know, bro. He hasn't done anything that special. And, you know, a lot of people give him shit because Apple hasn't innovated. I don't give him as much shit because I don't think you can make this much better than what it is right now. Like, I really don't. I don't know if you can make the iPhone that much better. You need a new form factor, aka a new product, a new device. And the Vision Pro is not it. So that one failed. His first actual product didn't work. And then the EV stuff, that didn't work probably because they said no to Tesla many years ago. They could have had that happen. And then the humanoid robotic stuff, they're just too late on. I mean, maybe it works out, but I think they're still late. So I think Apple needs to start paying a freaking dividend, like a healthier dividend, because the growth is not there, in my opinion. It's not there.
To me, I agree 100%. I think they just don't have the culture of innovation they used to have.
Yeah.
That died with Steve Jobs, unfortunately. Tim Cook is a all-star executive in the legacy sense, right? Apple is a world-class legacy company. I think they are the best legacy company in the world. I bought a MacBook Pro M3 with an M3 chip a couple months ago. I fucking love this laptop so much. It is so good. It's so reliable, so fast. It's the best machine I've ever had by far. My editing times have halved. It's portable. It's the freaking best thing I've ever used from a compute perspective. I love it to death. It's a laptop. It's a laptop. It's just the best possible laptop. In my opinion, they make the best possible phones. They make the best possible smartwatches, right? They have a phenomenal finance thing that's built into their phone. If I use my Apple Pay card, you know, which I use for a bunch of stuff, like I can budget very easily on it. It's auto-tax beautifully. You know, their savings account had a 5%, a 5.5% APR, you know, before they lower the interest rates. So it's like, okay, so this is great. And it's so easy. I can just put the money in, take it out. It's like they have a lot of really, really cool, great products that really work. But the thing is, in an age where innovation is about to go crazy and growth is about to go crazy, they are not well positioned at all to do their own thing. And if they're not going to take risks in partnering with the right people, like, I can't believe that Tim Cook would look at Elon and be like, that's a risky investment. Like, what else do you need to see, bro? If I had an Apple-sized company with whatever, $200 billion in cash or $100 billion, whatever they have now, and 40% margins and insane cash flow and ridiculous, market sort of like penetration and brand, like, no one views Apple. I mean, they have Apple haters, but everyone respects Apple. They're what, the second largest company in the world or whatever now, or first biggest company in the world. You have everything. If you have everything, how could you not throw your weight behind Elon? That makes, just let him go to work. Dude, just give him 2% of Apple and just be like, just fucking build everything for us. Like, why not just do that? Dilute, dude, if they diluted the investing base by 2%, and just told Elon, just give us priority for everything, whatever that, just come up with something. How Apple would fucking double in the span of 5 years, because the marriage of artificial intelligence and Apple products is obvious. It's obvious, you know?
So how come we don't have a Bill Ackman, Brad Gerstner, like, activist shareholder campaign to force Apple's hand to do exactly this? Like, I don't know. This just looks like the most obvious thing in all of tech. Like, there is no tech company better positioned to capitalize on artificial intelligence than Apple if they can just get the fuck out of their own way. And yet,
what's their market cap?
They're like, everyone assumes that they're going to fumble this ball.
Yeah, it is confusing, bro. It is really confusing because they had so many opportunities to work with Elon and they rejected him at all those moments. And kind of thank goodness, right? Imagine if they bought Tesla in 2018, like how this, you know, world would have played out. But I agree. There's a couple of verticals that are important. That's AI, robotics, and then self-driving. Self-driving, Tesla has on a lock. Apple's not going to have the cars. Robotics, Apple has a chance maybe if they license Optimus or start building their own robots. They could, maybe that could be their new iPhone, but is it going to be better than Optimus? Maybe not. Probably not. And then AI, if XAI really has the better LLMs, that needs to be incorporated into the phone. But you need to create use cases on the phone that people enjoy using in order for those LLMs to be valuable. And I don't see any of those happening for Apple. I see them selling more iPads and MacBooks that are incrementally getting kind of better, but not really. Services is some good growth, but how much services can you really sell over the next decade?
It's such a shame. It really is such a shame because the potential's there. Just like, it's so frustrating. But that's why I think, like, you know, before GM and Ford and all these legacy car companies became what they are today, which are just dividend generating companies that take no risks and all they do is just make sure their investing base gets their expected return year in and year out, and they try to keep a very healthy market share and healthy brand perception. That's Apple. Apple is not, like, Apple is no longer Apple. The Apple of old died a long time ago. The Apple of new is just a company that's extremely well managed to be what it is right now. And there is little to no vision for the long term. And here's, like, if we use the Vision Pro as an example, right? I bought the Vision Pro going into it thinking it's like, hey, like, there's a lot of potential here. Like, I was very impressed with the risk. And it works. Like, the technology is without a doubt incredibly impressive. It's by far the most easy to use VR headset I've ever used. Super clear. The problem is it's $3,500. It's too heavy, and I don't understand the use case. I don't understand the use case. Right.
Yeah.
Unless, like, the only way that works is if they can get it down to the, which I know Meta's working on. Right. Zuck. Like, here's the deal. I would say that Facebook Meta is 100 times more innovative than Apple. And they're 100 times better at executing against that innovation. Zuck should not be underestimated. That motherfucker figured something out. He figured something out. He has learned from his trials and tribulations. And I know he's, like, trying to transform his public persona. He knows what he's doing, but he's executing. Like, making their AI solution open source, that's a huge deal. The Meta glasses, impressive. Facebook sucks, right? But they're making money. Yeah. And they're taking risks. Like, they took a giant risk with the Oculus and the thing, the what was it? He was working on VR, right? Like he bet $60 billion on VR or whatever it was.
Metaverse.
Yeah. And then he was like, you know what? This didn't really work out. He dumped it. He fired like, what, 30% of the staff and moved the company to go somewhere else. That, like, why can't Apple should be doing something like that? Like, why, like, you have every, like, but their investor base would flip their shit. They're not going to allow them to do that.
Yeah. I mean, Zuck is the founder and Tim Cook is not. Like,
that's a great point.
It really is that simple.
Yeah. No, I would agree. I would agree with all that. And I think that the world we're going into is going to be, it's moving so fast, like so fast. And if you're not moving with it and consumers are moving with the same speed, right? If they don't like ChatGPT, they'll just stop using it. They'll move on to something else. So like if, like ChatGPT has 300 million weekly active users, but I'm like, so where is the business model here? Because all these guys are not paying $20 a month. Most of these guys don't want to pay a single dollar. So you got to do advertising. If that's the case, then you're just a smaller version of Google. You can't charge $200 a month. Not everyone's going to pay that. So like, where is the value coming from? And I think with Elon, there is a clear, obvious value to XAI. The brain of Optimus, Grok, which is now becoming the town square and interpreted into Twitter, and then FSD. And that to me is worth probably just as much as OpenAI, even though they're worth a third of OpenAI right now.
Well, especially if Grok 3 delivers. I mean, if OpenAI wants to offer a $200 a month subscription for the super uber duper, you know, O1 that thinks forever, and then Elon can deliver the same functionality for $20 a month because his cluster spends, you know, a nanosecond to provide you with the same answer that the OpenAI cluster takes you 5 minutes to deliver, then all of the consumers who are paying $200 a month right now are going to go, they're just going to drop you like a hot potato. You're all that revenue is gone. And with all that revenue disappearing, the entire market, like your growth story implodes overnight and your valuation goes from $150 billion to two.
And that's going to happen. That's exactly what's going to happen in the world of like LLMs. The like as somebody who uses it on the daily now, a heavy user of LLMs, the thing that I'm most interested in is how quickly can you get me to exactly the thing I'm looking for the lowest cost possible. That's it. I want the prompt, and here's the thing, and I don't want to spend a lot of time building the prompt. I want it to read my mind, and I want it to blow my mind. And I don't want to spend much time or money doing it. That's what in my opinion, that should be the bare minimum requirement, right? What's the acronym for like the, why am I blanking on this? Like minimal viable product, right? The MVP. The minimal viable product for a true LLM, artificial intelligence, that gives you the thing you're looking for is just let me write something down. You know what I mean, right? You already know what I'm trying to get to because past history, and maybe you can infer things based on what I'm saying with enough examples. I'm going to get there and remember that for every other example moving forward. I'm going to give it to you for $20 a month maximum, and I'm going to do it for you immediately, right? And you never have to worry about quality ever. Like, why? That shouldn't be a low expectation. What is the best way to do that is to have all the compute and to have all the data that you can infer from to be able to and train on to come to that solution.
Right.
And XAI is in a way better position to do that.
Well, that's another thing. Because of all the real-time data, I catch myself using Grok all the time to get news.
Dude, it's so good for that.
It'll summarize the tweets. It'll show you the source where they got it from. And it's like ChatGPT has to scan the web, which is not as easy or not as efficient or quite frankly, not as trustworthy as me asking about Tesla news. And then Hans or Farzad comes up and like, oh, I can trust these guys. I know that's there. I see the source and I can keep going from there. Right.
Yeah. And the thing is Perplexity can do that as well.
Yeah.
Like Perplexity is already ahead of ChatGPT in a lot of ways, you know? Like GPT, I used to like take the data from Grok and Perplexity that they give me like a foundation of knowledge. And then I put that into ChatGPT to make that into the thing I'm looking for, right? But the reason why I use ChatGPT 01 is because they just happen to be at the farthest point right now to give me the best result based on the data they have. But I bet you $1 million once Grok 3 is out, it's going to be able to do everything that I'm looking for. Build a foundation of knowledge because it's up-to-date data. It has the X is uniquely positioned because not only do they have up-to-date information, they have up-to-date information that is ahead of the rest of the world, right? So it's like you can infer, the trends you can infer from that are insane.
Yeah.
And so that's like, I'm going to go on a gigantic rant because it's like, I just don't understand how you beat that.
Yeah, it's essentially, you know, how when they build trading platforms, like the companies that are closest to the market on fiber, you know, they have an advantage because they're getting that information, you know, just a couple milliseconds before other people, and that gives them the advantage. And X is essentially exactly that for real-time news and information around the world, that it's just the highest density platform for, like, obviously there's lots of information on there that's not high quality, but the first place that the internet is going to have mass access to the most important information is X, and like it's not even close. And so they have that asset that then gets to feed the AI brain. And it's crazy that Elon has been able to, you know, acquire through almost like by accident all of these incredibly important assets that just give him these massive points of leverage to continue building the most important products across like industry after industry after industry after industry.
Yeah. It's a fun time for you guys covering Tesla every day.
That's crazy. It's crazy. It's like almost like just following the Musk industry. Like, what's insane, and it's like Hans can tell you about this, and if David, our media guy, was here, he would tell you about this. I can't tell you how many times I'm like, we need to figure out how to branch out. Yeah. Because we're like, because sometimes I'm burned out. I don't want to talk about like what he's doing. But then this motherfucker comes out with the craziest shit. And I'm like, God damn it. Why do you keep reeling me in?
I try to get out and they reel me back in.
Yeah. It's so hard. But it's like, this is the sign of the times, is that I don't think it's hyperbolic to say that this guy's going to be at the forefront of the transformation of civilization in the next 5-10 years. That's just fortunately, that's a factual statement. And talking about it, especially if you're somebody who wants to be an investor into these things, and I'm not saying invest in it, but understanding these things deeply are going to give a pathway for people for better understanding of what the future is going to look like. It's going to happen. And understanding what the future is going to look like from my learnings has been the single most valuable thing that I've been able to use as an investor. If I can visualize the future with a relatively high percent or, you know, degree of accuracy, then by default, I'm going to be able to identify things that don't exist today that exist in the future. And those are the things that generally become good investments, because if people don't see the value for them now, but they see the value for them in the future, by default, you have a TAM that exists now that is valued something, right?
Right.
So, and it seems like this guy is like the singular thing, like not singular. He is at the top of the food chain for bringing that forward. Jensen for NVIDIA. If I view the NVIDIA like thing, Karp with Palantir, Lucky with, why do I keep blanking on his fucking name?
Anduril.
Thank you. Like, these are individuals that bring the future forward. But like, they're hard to grasp in the moment because it's like, they're kind of quirky. Maybe it's esoteric, really nerdy. It's like, it sounds crazy, right? But then when you sit down, you think about it and you look into it, you're like, oh fuck. Okay. Yeah. This is totally what's going to happen. This is totally what's going to happen. It just needs time and execution, you know, and navigating today's landscape of FUD and how quickly media can distort what's actually happening, right? It's so fun. It's so fun.
I'm just happy he bought Twitter because, like, I mean, that platform, we all three use it every day. It's an amazing platform. The platform's growing. There's opportunities. They're actually paying people money to post. I mean, like, you don't feel that afraid to say something and think that you're going to get banned necessarily. You know, it's just like, it's becoming one of those platforms where I don't see, you know, the problem is they don't have a billion users, and TikTok and Instagram will do. But I think Elon's got some plans to get, they have 600 million. So he needs another 400 million. And really, I think if they introduce short form video with Vine and stuff like that they used to have, that could get people there. But, not a lot of people are like, they don't want to read stuff all day. They just want to have dopamine entertainment. And I think if Elon brings that part to the platform, I think it gets to a billion users in the next decade. And it is the go-to platform for anyone who wants to be influential.
I think about it in two different ways. I think that AI tools they're going to offer are going to be a gigantic separator and a value add for a lot of people. And I think financial services are super underrated. I think if X can become a hub for like the real PayPal, then your TAM is anyone with money and a phone. You know? I think ultimately that's why he bought Twitter. Like, free speech was very important, but the business case is, in my opinion, I'm going to build something where anyone with money and a phone can use it, and then I'm going to keep them there by giving them a ton of useful AI shit. And then while they're there, I'm going to just fucking feed them with information, videos, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, and I think that on top of that, Elon understands that in an information landscape where that gets totally redefined by the combination of the internet, international open access, and artificial intelligence, that media is that other incredibly important layer. And I don't know that the final form of that converges to a TikTok. I think there's a new form factor, and I think it's more likely to be discovered and platformed and scaled through X than anything else.
I think that's a very interesting point. It's like a new way of ingesting information.
Yeah. And look, I don't know if Twitter necessarily beats or X beats YouTube per se. They just need more users. They need a better form of video discovery, but real-time information, like it's like Threads, Blue Sky, like get the fuck out of here. Like it's X, you know?
100%.
And I think they just have to, as you said, the AI thing is a tailwind for enhancing that information more. The free speech stuff to me is important. Hopefully it's more important to people across the world over the next decade. And then it's just a question of compounding users. And if they can do that and keep them on the platform, I think it's worth more than $44
billion. I agree. Dude, what, like Hans's point from before is like, there's no way this guy doesn't get an ROI on $44
billion. I think
there's no fucking way. There's no way. There's no way. Go ahead, Hans.
I love Substack, but I also think like folding a Substack thing under X and really figuring out a business model around decentralized, true, deep investigative journalism. Like, that's one of the things that's so freaking hard to do. Like, the upfront investment to actually accomplish real investigative journalism is high. And so if he can figure out a way to allow investigative journalists to really make a living on the platform, and I think that, you know, like that's what Substack is doing, but I think that the network effects of Substack on X just blows that out of the water and makes that business model and lifestyle way more viable, way more profitable. And that would be such a huge win for humanity, because like we need more high quality Glenn Greenwalds and Matt Taibbis and Michael Schellenbergers
100%.
Out there digging through the bones, you know, Scott Horton and friggin' Mike Benz. Like, we need more of these people who are investigating the foundations of our institutions and trying to, like, we need institutions, but we need them to be better than they are. And so we need to, you know, some will need to be destroyed, but some will need to be just re-architected, or cleaned out. Just like, hey, let's actually, do whatever the goal of this institution is according to like solid principles, using solid methods and character and integrity. And so, yeah, that's another area of, you know, where the future of the platform, I think, is headed, because that's what Elon, like, we're going to have to go through this whole process of Doge here in the United States government. But I think that X becomes also a forcing function to hold institutions to these higher standards, through a mechanism that's like that.
100% agreed.
I would agree as well.
100% agreed. Emmett, before we let you go, can you give me your expectation for 2025? Try to look into a crystal ball. Think about macro, think about micro, think about what you pay attention to. What is something that's going to happen in 2025 that is not being talked about enough? That's a very easy question, Amit. You should be able to answer that super easily. What a piece of cake.
I think there's new verticals popping up in 2025 that the market is still excited about. So you got eVTOLs with Archer and Joby Aviation. They're getting momentum. You've got AI, obviously, increasing margins. I think the margin efficiency story in 2025 is going to be the ROI that the market's looking for from AI, especially in these like enterprise software applications in embedded within Palantir, Snowflake, Datadog, all that stuff. And then I think robotics is going to be a vertical. I don't know if we get true humanoid robotics scale, but I think we definitely start to see the beginning of that. And so the market starts pricing that in. So I think when you have the AI vertical, the robotics vertical, the margin efficiency vertical, you've got rate cuts that are coming down. That's going to be bullish. If tariffs don't go crazy, which I don't think Trump's going to go crazy with them, then you have inflation that probably is going to be stuck around 2.5%, hopefully goes lower, but 2.5 I think is reasonable. And then you've got earnings growth, which is not going to be like 2024 levels of growth, but it's still going to be 9 to 10% growth, which is still very good on Amazon, Nvidia, these big companies with these big bases. I think 2025 is bullish. You got a lot of analysts calling for 7,000 on the S&P. I think there's a shot we get there, because there's also $6.77 trillion on the sidelines in money market funds that eventually are going to get a little bit of FOMO, and are also, if we get a nasty 10, 15% correction in the market, are going to say, this is my opportunity to be part of this technological revolution. I missed Nvidia, I missed Palantir, I missed Tesla. All right, everything's down 20%. Let me get in. And so I think macro-wise, that's good. China stimulating, that's good across the world as well. As long as earnings growth continues to be what it is, which as of Q3, companies have crushed it. I think Q4, they're going to crush it. Then we have to see guidance for Q1. I think it'll be a good year. And I think Tesla's probably over 400. Actually.
What's the biggest downside you're tracking for 2025?
I guess there would be two. One is geopolitical instability. We saw what was happening with Syria over the weekend. I think if anything wild happens, that could create some issues in regards to how the market thinks of the peace we have in the world. China investigating Nvidia today, right? That's kind of geopolitical. That's annoying for Nvidia. And then the second thing to me is, people losing their jobs. So a recession. And the way that people would lose their jobs is if rate cuts are not having the effect the Fed wants it to have in terms of stimulating the economy. We saw rate cut probabilities went from 65% to 89% last week, because the unemployment rate went from 4.1 to 4.2. And the market knows the Fed wants to protect the labor market. So they know we're definitely going to get that cut. So as long as we don't get job cuts and nothing crazy happens geopolitically, I think next year is setting up to be a pretty strong. But those are my two biggest concerns.
I want to add another candidate for, you know, something surprising in 2025. Unfortunately, I don't think it's going to be accessible in the public markets, though. And that is going to be the rise of a homegrown United States drone industry that is going to be kind of subsidized at the federal government level, because it absolutely needs to be kickstarted. Like, we absolutely cannot allow DJI to just run away with the consumer drone market. And that's going to become a national security and a defense priority for the United States. So, you know, winners are definitely going to be companies like Anduril for the military application. But there needs to be an actual consumer facing company and industry that gets developed here in the United States as well. And I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be in the United States, but it has to be ex-China, and it has to be a very close ally, you know, of the US.
Yeah.
Agreed.
I think the one thing that you brought up before we let you go, Amit, is that has me concerned about, let's say, maybe not the next year, but the next rest of the decade, is AI, robotics, automation will for sure increase earnings for companies, but it will also displace labor, for sure. So growing company earnings, growing unemployment. That's scary. That's scary to me. Because I think there is a world where, and I think that's why things like Doge and things like a responsive government to the people are going to be so incredibly important for the coming decade, 5 to 10 years, is if we don't, the reason why is because if we don't have the proper things in place for the people that will inevitably lose their jobs to self-driving cars, self-driving trucks, coding, whatever, landscaping, building, warehouse work, et cetera, while those companies get bigger and bigger and more powerful and those people kind of get displaced, what is the ecosystem that exists for those people to take on the thing that they really are supposed to be doing, but also be able to have a living, right? That to me scares the shit out of me, because that's going to be a transition period we're for sure going to go through. Now, it could be the opposite, like the positive side could come up, which is like, hey, we're going to have so many incredibly affordable AI solutions that anyone's going to be able to build wealth. Like a lot of people are going to be able to build wealth when they get their time back, quote unquote, by being displaced by these automated systems. Or the TAMs are going to get so gigantic that we're going to need people to come and work, you know, in these areas. That's the other side of it. But that this transitionary period, I'm very, very positive about the future, but the transitionary period is going to be chaotic. And I think next year might be the first inning of that, where we start seeing this trend. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on that, but that's one thing I'm tracking very, very closely.
Yeah, I would say I don't know how the government's going to solve the automation work replacement problem. UBI, what are we in? Is UBI really the method? They just throw money at people? I don't know. It's going to be an existential question of our lifetimes. And I eventually think we'll have an answer, you know, in the next 10 years, but we definitely don't have an answer next year to see how it is going to play out.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit less concerned that we really start to see the impact of that next year. It's possible, but, you know, one of the things that we as Palantir investors see is the companies that are adopting Palantir are not really laying off a whole lot of workforce. They're just increasing productivity. Yeah. And so if that is the guide, like that's the data point that we have to work with right now. And so based on that, I think that people are going to be more focused on growing productivity than they are on displacing their workforces. So as long as enough of the large companies continue to, and this is good for us as Palantir investors, that the big companies who are being threatened by upstarts need to be adopting Palantir so that they can grow productivity commensurate with their ability to compete against the new nimble startups that are definitely going to be nipping at their heels.
My pushback to that would be the companies that adopt Palantir now are going to be fast moving and forward thinking by default, which means that they've right sized their staff much more closely to where they should be to take this on. My fear is that once Palantir starts becoming adopted by the masses, by default, these companies are going to be much more bloated, less efficient, and perhaps this becomes a forcing function for them to shed instead of take on productivity. It's like, how can we increase earnings for our investors instead of like, how can we just become a better company? I know the easiest route is to become a more profitable company. The hardest route is how can we increase productivity long term?
Yeah.
And I don't have the fucking answer. You know, none of us do. But these are like the questions that keep coming up, I think, as I think about this transition. Anyway, Amit, thank you so much, brother. Where can people find you?
x.com/AmitIsInvesting. And if you type in Palantir and Amit on YouTube, I should probably pop up, hopefully.
The king of Palantir. We've promoted him from the prince of Palantir to the king of Palantir. Amit, thank you so much, dude. You bring incredible value. Always a joy. Next time, we'll make sure to ask you more questions.
No, I love listening to you guys. I try to catch as many pods as I can. I caught the one with Chris Camillo. It's good stuff. I mean, you guys are, you know, there's a lot of Tesla creators, but there's not enough that are spending an hour, 2 hours, like really diving deep into one topic. And you guys are the reason I'm buying Tesla stock. Like, you guys are obsessed about it. You helped me understand it even better. And, you know, I think all of us will do well on it.
Not financial advice. Thank you, Amit.
Take care,
brother.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. See you on the next one.
See you, man.
Bye, everyone.
And recording.